Tim Abraham, I'm the Director of Trade Strategy at the British Department of Trade and Industry in London.
Now, you're here to discuss social justice in trade, and you're moving from here to a meeting in the Vatican. Would you like to say something about that?
Yes, indeed. I'm delighted to be here in the Vatican, and as you say, to discuss with members of the Justice and Peace Council and the Secretariat of State the role of trade in social justice and in development of the third world, of the developing world, an area which is of particular importance to the UK, and a subject that from our Prime Minister downwards is something that the British government feels very strongly about, and I sense is something that we very much share an agenda with the Vatican.
Well, how do you decide trade strategies?
That's a very good question, and it's a complicated answer, but I'll try and explain. I think the best place to start is to understand that trade and encouraging trade and liberalising trade is one of the most efficient ways of increasing wealth and prosperity across the world. Historically, the UK has been very supportive of free liberal trade to encourage this. But recently, and particularly under the current government, there has been more and more of an emphasis on how trade can particularly help the developing world. And so I think it would be fair to say that we have supported policies of increasing trade liberalisation, but in a way that helps developing countries. So it's all about providing the right international rules for trade so that trade is fair as well as free.
But you're working a lot with European governments, and each country has its own culture, its own environment, its own interests. And the developing countries also have their own interests and culture and everything else. So how do you coordinate all that?
It's a very complicated, multidimensional chess game. The United Kingdom, though a large country and a large economy, is one member of 25 in the European Union and one member of 149 in the World Trade Organization. So it is very much a question of influencing, first of all, our colleagues in the European Union to a position that is consistent with a fair but a free but fair trading system, and then enabling Peter Mandelson on behalf of the European Union to negotiate in the wider world forum. So we, as the United Kingdom, our first objective is to secure the support of our European colleagues for our policy. And as you quite rightly say, there are as many different views around the table as there are countries, and there are legitimate concerns of a number of our colleagues around the table for their own industries, their own agriculture. So it is very much a complicated matrix of influencing, but we hope that over time we can bring forward the sort of policies that will help the developing world.
Because it must be quite difficult to actually form priorities.
It certainly is. And whilst from a UK point of view, one of the priorities, perhaps the major priority, is the development angle. But equally well, we are keen to see a trading system that helps British and other European companies prosper in the world trading system, so that they have opportunities to trade industrial goods and indeed services increasingly as globalization develops across the world, and so that they can bring prosperity to the UK and Europe, as well as with our trading partners overseas.
Yes, because if you've got, say, the British ability to trade in, say, telecommunications, so many of the countries in the developing world don't have the infrastructure to adequately use the equipment that could be available, and they don't have the people to maintain the equipment once it comes.
That is a very good point and a very good example that you give in terms of telecommunications. I think we would say that actually the liberalisation of telecommunications services is a great opportunity for the many developing countries to develop that infrastructure that they need to be able to grow economically and therefore increase prosperity and reduce poverty in their countries. But clearly such liberalisation will need to be done in a way that is consistent with what their stage of development and their ability to cope with greater liberalisation and the competition that it brings.
And on the part of the developing countries themselves, you sometimes get difficult situations developing. For instance, I saw during my time in Zambia the influx of second-hand clothing, which was very, very valuable to so many people who couldn't afford to buy new clothes. It also gave employment, but at the same time as having those benefits, it destroyed the textile industry.
That is a good example of where sometimes short-term benefits can have longer-term damage, and indeed shows the complexity of trade as a whole. I think it is clear that increased trade is in the long term always a good thing, but there will always be short-term losers, and it is important to, particularly when dealing with developing countries, to account for this. So, for instance, rather like your example of second-hand clothes, the European Union and others sell agricultural products to developing countries at reduced prices using export subsidies. Now, in the short term, taking away these subsidies will increase the cost of agricultural products to particularly those countries, the urban people in certain developing countries, and there may be short-term problems there. But in the longer term, the reduction of subsidised agricultural products coming to developing countries should enable those developing countries to develop their agricultural industries and indeed as a start to their economic development. But we in the West need to help that process and make sure that we do not force the pace in a way that developing countries cannot sustain.
And what happens when you've got, say, something like the cotton industry? Now, cotton in the part of Zambia where I was wasn't a very huge industry, but the people who were involved with it were very, very poor. Now, in some parts of the world, you've got cotton heavily subsidised, and in other parts, and there tend to be the parts that most need the income, there isn't a subsidy, so there seems to be an imbalance.
There certainly is an imbalance, and cotton is a good example where, as part of the current round of trade talks, the Doha Development Agenda, the issue of cotton has been a very important one, and is a almost totemic example of where developing countries are subsidising the production of an agricultural product to the detriment of the developing world. And we, as the United Kingdom, as the European Union, are very keen to see both that that doesn't happen in the EU, because we do a certain amount of subsidy of cotton, but frankly, the United States in particular, we are keen to see them reduce their subsidies for cotton for those very reasons, to allow those countries, of particularly of Africa, to use their natural competitive advantage and grow cotton and be able to sell it on the world world market.
And with you mentioning competition, another thing that I saw time and time again in Africa was that with the small traders, you'd have somebody who might find that they had a very good market for bread rolls. And so they'd start making bread and it would be really successful. Other people would see and they'd start doing the same. So they killed off their own market in a very, very short period of time. How do you encourage competition without breaking down the local village structure?
Well, that's a very good question, and clearly local competition within a country is not something that the international trade rules will determine, but in terms of but that there are nice parallels between your example of bread rolls and, for instance, the international market in coffee, where a number of countries have come in and have oversupplied the market, so that as in your example, the prices go down and the market, particularly for the sellers, has collapsed. Now, I think there is always a balance to be struck between allowing the market to find its own level and encouraging the a situation where producers are actually it is worthwhile for them to produce. So in the example of your bakery, one would hope that the market will understand and individuals will understand that actually coming into that market is not a very good idea. There is a role for aid agencies and others to encourage a diversification and to encourage individuals who may say, oh yes, well, there seems to be a nice market in bread rolls, to think, ah, yes, no, but perhaps we should be selling cakes or vegetables or clothes or something else. So there has to be this balance between allowing the market to work, but encouraging, educating and providing the wherewithal for countries to change their economies gradually in order to benefit from wider markets.
Because there would be, without legislation, quite a temptation to the economically stronger countries to pressurise the weaker countries into accepting goods and services that they didn't really want and were irrelevant.
Well, that is the beauty and the strength of the World Trade Organization, because here you have an organization of 149 members, over two-thirds of whom are developing countries, where the international trade rules are agreed by consensus across all of those countries, so that in the current round of negotiations, the Doha Development Agenda, the weaker, more vulnerable countries are in a position to be able to say no. Now, politically, one developing country is unlikely to be able to stand up to the other 148. But it has been very encouraging that during these current negotiations, that developing countries in particular have formed alliances and are very much stronger, and their voice is very much more heard than in previous negotiations. And indeed, they play a very important role in those negotiations, and I'm sure they will make sure that what is agreed will be good for them as well as for the rest of the world.
And to what extent do the people in the developed countries who are responsible for legislation actually go out into the field in the developing countries? And I don't mean just going to that country and staying in the capital within the UN building, but actually go out into the most remote areas, go down into the swamps and see what the fishermen with their leaky dugout canoes are actually looking for.
That's a very good point. I think increasingly, I'm sure that in previous times, the trade negotiators were in their ivory towers negotiating very much between themselves, and they probably didn't even meet anybody from a developing country, never mind actually go there and see. But there is now an increasingly close alliance between the trade people and development departments of governments, and so yes, you will find trade people in the developing world, and certainly a lot of information and understanding of what is happening there comes back. And I have to say, speaking from the United Kingdom's point of view, I must pay tribute to a lot of the NGOs, the non-governmental organisations, who have been assiduous in making sure that we in government, who are responsible for trade issues, are very well aware of what is going on in the developing world, and that we take full account of that in the negotiations.
Now, you're moving from Vatican Radio to your next meeting up in the Vatican. What would be the thing that you would most like to see come out of this meeting?
I think that what I would like to see is I would like to get an understanding from the Vatican of their of their perceptions of the role of trade and in the alleviation of poverty and the objectives for the developing world. I hope that we can, as I said earlier, I think we, the Vatican and the United Kingdom, have a lot of common ground in our objectives in this area, and I hope that we can work together to influence opinion. The Vatican is clearly a very important player in influencing public opinion and governments. To encourage opinion in support of this idea of using trade to alleviate poverty, increase prosperity in the developing world, and I hope we can work together to do that.
Thank you very much indeed.